Case number 08-7098. Act Now to Stop War and End Racism, Coalition et al. Appellants versus District of Columbia. Mr. Messanillo for the appellants, Mr. Hayden for the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Carl Messanillo on behalf of the appellants in this case. We've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. The District of Columbia's postering on public space regulation establishes a content-based tiered hierarchy of privileges and restrictions that unconstitutionally distinguishes between types of non-commercial and political speech based on content. The regulation imposes removal requirements and finite durational restrictions on certain content that is effectively disfavored within the regulation. It also unconstitutionally imposes a registration requirement, which effectively prevents anonymous postering on public space. And it also—
Supreme Court's upheld that.
Pardon me?
Supreme Court's upheld political speech against the challenge that there's a right to speak anonymously.
The Supreme Court has struck down registration requirements, for example, where there was door-to-door canvassing.
The City of Stratton case, you're right. But what do you do with McConnell? That's political speech, and the Supreme Court held that individuals have to reveal their identity and address to the Federal Election Commission.
Election law is a highly regulated and particularized area of law, but this is
at the core of the First Amendment. The Supreme Court said there's no right to anonymous speech.
With respect to leafleting on public space, I believe that falls under the contours of the cases, such as the Watchtower case, that says that persons who wish to engage in this core, historically protected, and profoundly important form of political communication should be entitled to do so anonymously, or else the structural risk is that unpopular causes will be discouraged.
Yeah, well, this is at best a limited public forum. But even in public forum analysis, you're not maintaining that someone that wants to march down Constitution Avenue can do so anonymously, that they don't have to go get a permit and give their name and address, are you?
If there's a march of 100,000 persons going
down.
No,
had two.
You're asking two persons?
Yeah.
If two persons want to march down Constitutional Avenue holding a sign, I don't think that under the laws that they as they exist, the permitting rules would not require any type of permit.
You can go out on Constitution Avenue and hold.
Oh, you mean on the street itself? Forgive me, Your Honor.
I
was thinking of the sidewalks, of course.
Yeah. Even the sidewalks, this is really not the issue, but I think you really overstate this whole business about content discrimination. That content discrimination is runs through the First Amendment. The Supreme Court treats commercial speech differently than non-commercial speech, right?
No, that's not core political speech. It certainly
does.
No.
Does the Supreme Court treat commercial speech differently than non-commercial speech?
Absolutely.
Isn't that content discrimination? Does the Supreme Court treat fighting words different than other kinds of words?
Your Honor, I would direct.
What's the answer to that?
Metro Media is a response. My response to Your Honor's inquiry is to direct Your Honor's attention to the Metro Media case, which articulates these distinctions, which you are drawing my attention to, and establishes that within political speech, within forms of non-commercial and political speech, that you cannot discriminate because there are certain core.
We're already here on an abstention question, and let me ask you, as far as that's concerned, it's true that you have one large section, but in 108, but then there are all these various subsections. On what basis would you can you possibly claim that the section dealing with adhesives is unconstitutional?
I think that there is a predicate evaluation that must be undertaken as to whether it is severable from the rest of the
regulation. What do you think about it? It's not severable.
Correct, Your Honor.
Well, okay, let me just, and that leads into... Yeah, let me just ask about this. So there would be an argument that if this were severable, that we would put, we would abstain only with respect to your attack on 108.9, because that you could make as a defense. But if you're telling me that it's inseverable, then we have to decide whether everything is Youngered or not, correct?
I'm saying that an essential predicate evaluation that needs to be undertaken is severability.
What I want to know is what argument are you, would you be making in the District of Columbia? Would you argue that 108.9, that the tickets we received on for 108.9 are wrong, A, because our adhesive wasn't, didn't do damage, and B, maybe because it's vague? Or would you argue that you can't cite us under 108.9 because all the postering regulations have to go down together?
I have two responses in slight tension, and I'd like to explain them. Strictly as a legal matter, looking at this as an attorney, as a legal matter, I do not think that, strictly speaking, there is any indication that one that any of these provisions, which all fall underneath one singular regulation, 108, mm-hmm. there's no indication that they are severable, that there was an intent to make them severable.
So, just so I understand, your defense there would be... that you would make a general constitutional attack, and that would defend you from the tickets for the adhesives.
And the area, the element that is in tension, Your Honor, is that as a tactical matter, the plaintiffs in this case actually said, you know, if you want to try us on that, we're not objecting to it.
You are the plaintiffs in this case. I'm not sure.
In the Answer Coalition, which was cited under the adhesive provision, really took a tactical decision made of tactical restraint. The city was at the time coming out saying to the media that they were damaging public property, and the Answer Coalition did say, you know, if you want to try us on damaging public property, we're not asking to enjoin an adjudication of that provision.
So, in terms of the relief they were requesting, they actually did not ask to enjoin it. We're talking about the administrative proceeding.
Yes.
In the District of Columbia. Are you saying that you will, you have not, and you will not, when you appeal to the Superior Court of the District of Columbia, if you lose, you'll not make a general defense on unconstitutionality of the entire regulations?
That's not my representation.
Okay. So you will make that claim, or you might make that claim.
So that means
then that either everything is Youngered or nothing is Youngered. Is that right?
Which
sounds different than the claim you were making in your brief.
If you look, for example, at the Padow case, the superior local court case that was presented.
I just want to know your view about this. Is your view then that we either have to abstain on everything or on nothing?
Our position was that you do not have to abstain on everything or nothing because, as we requested, as Answer Coalition requested in terms of its relief, it did not request that this court abstain or that this court enjoin the administrative proceedings insofar as they dealt with the property damage allegation.
What you were seeking before the district court, it looked to me, reading your complaint, and also the discussion and oral argument with the district judge, that you were arguing that the entire regulation 108 in toto was unconstitutional for a variety of reasons. And am I correct in describing your complaint?
Yes, and the relief that was requested with respect to the Answer Coalition, which was cited, did not seek to enjoin the administrative hearing precisely because of the adhesive element, and that was a tactical restraint because they felt, let's just deal with it.
The refraining from asking for an injunction, but you are asking for a declaratory judgment that all of 108 is invalid, right?
That's correct,
Your Honor. That's the way it looked.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. I just want to ask from the other side, not with respect to what you're seeking here, but about how you might defend yourself there. You're acknowledging that, assuming you lose in the agency, that you would at least try in the court to strike down the whole statute as a defense.
We would, or the ANCHOR coalition, yes, would assert constitutional defenses. And the element of uncertainty here is that it's not enough just to be able to have the colorable right to assert the defense. For this to be an adequate forum, there has to be a meaningful likelihood that the constitutionality would, in fact, be addressed.
The Court of Appeals and the Superior Court have a Rule 11 there also. And so if you're going to, you would not be able to make this claim unless you had a colorable possibility. You're telling me that you do have a colorable possibility of striking the whole thing down on constitutional claims in the D.C. Court of Appeals.
No, I'm saying that is an unlikely possibility by virtue of the posture of the case as a civil enforcement action, that the enforcement action will in fact be affirmed. If there can be any factual basis sustaining the fine, it will in fact be affirmed.
I must say that I find your position totally indecipherable. What is your defense in the administrative proceedings? Tell me, just give me in a nutshell how you're defending.
Well, they didn't damage public property, Your Honor.
That it wasn't adhesives?
No, they used adhesive, certainly. They used adhesive that is acceptable, that was sufficient to hold. They used wheat paste, a water-soluble adhesive. It holds a poster to the surface such that it can't be torn down through wind or other things, which is a requirement of 108.8, that it has to be sufficiently strong.
So there's no constitutional issue at all. You're not raising any constitutional issue at all in the administrative proceedings. It's only, did we use the proper paste? That's it?
No, Your Honor. We will raise constitutional defenses because they're entitled to raise whatever defenses are available to them. The primary thrust of these notices of infractions, as they are written on the face, speaks of property damage, improper adhesive. On that factual matter, we are absolutely saying that there's no basis for that.
I'm surprised, but it seems like you're arguing yourself out of court. That is, you could make an argument that all we can defend ourselves against in the District of Columbia is the adhesives claim, and therefore there's no reason to Younger abstain with respect to, for example, our challenges about durational issues, because we could never raise those in the District of Columbia because they're not relevant to the adhesives claim. Then you might have an argument that we need to split. But you're not making that argument. Instead, you're saying we are holding out that we likely will argue that the whole statute has to come down. And if that's the case, then there's not much of an argument for splitting.
But that's not going to be adjudicated by any court. If the court does what it did in the Padow case, the local court did, which did implicitly sever the claim, sever the provisions.
Why, when I ask you this, are you not willing to say we do not intend to raise any constitutional claims in defense?
I'm not saying that I'm unwilling to say that. I'm just saying that.
Well, no. Not only were you not unwilling to say it, you said you would be raising them.
If it would get our day in court to cede those defenses, I would consult with my client about that.
The question is which court? That's what we're trying to figure out here.
The issue, and I have to also emphasize that we have two plaintiffs in this case. Abstention relates to the ANCHOR Coalition. The Muslim American Society Freedom Organization does not have an abstention issue, and the court ruling did not deal with abstention in any shape or form with the MassF organization, so that we really do have two distinct elements for the dismissal order. Nevertheless, I think that the issue is whether or not in the local proceedings it is likely to be adjudicated on the constitutional merits, and it's not likely. No matter what we were to say, no matter what we were to plead in terms of defenses, it is not likely to be reached. It's not likely to be reached because, A, the primary factual element is this adhesive thing, which is not a constitutional issue. And if the district were to actually prevail on that, and we trust their inspectors.
Do you have any constitutional attack that's specifically aimed at 108.9? Is there a vagueness claim or something?
The only element that relates to that would be vagueness, would be the tension between 108.8 and 108.9. But ultimately,
That's apart from the proposition that all the sections are non-severable, and therefore, for a variety of reasons, the whole regulation falls, right?
Right.
So those that theory you press here and you expect to press there to the extent that you're allowed to.
Our position is that if the inspectors indeed prove that there is property damage, we're not saying that there is any First Amendment protection for property damage. We're not saying that. If they can prove that, and that's what they say is the underlying factual situation,
And what?
Then there's no constitutional defense to property damage.
Right, but you're still saying that they can't ticket you under that section because it's vague, right? Constitutionally vague? Ticket you under that section because it's inseparable from the unconstitutionality of the whole.
Frankly, Your Honor, in terms of the factual continuum, if there is indeed property damage, I don't think that there's any issue that would be encompassed by this. I mean, that is not, if there's property damage, there's property damage. There's no protection for property damage.
What's your argument about why this is, that 0.9 is not severable? It would seem to me that if you are correct in your various constitutional claims, that and the rest of the statute falls, which means anybody can slap anything for any length of time on any public utility pole in the District of Columbia, that the legislature would want 0.9 in effect even more so, because that's the only control they would have. It's like an anti-graffiti law. So what's your argument it's not severable?
No, I'm not saying that provision, if enacted on its own, the issue of severability is whether the council intended for this provision,
the issue is whether if the other provisions fall, the council nevertheless would want this one, which is not attacked constitutionally, to stand.
And I believe that would be an argument in favor of severing that particular provision. We do not dispute or suggest that the council is out of bounds or failed to intend to say to prohibit property damage, or that property damage.
Well, now you think
what about the other subclause of 108.9, prevent their complete removal from the fixture?
We interpret that as property damage. If it cannot be removed, it is a permanent.
It doesn't have to be permanent. You can have a graffiti law that prohibits people from using watercolor paint on a building, even though that's not permanent. Where'd you get this permanent requirement?
Where it says, I was referring to the language that says prevent their complete removal, and from that I understand that to be conveying an inability to remove. That is my understanding of that language. When it says it prevents the complete removal.
You also make the vagueness claim is not a First Amendment claim. I mean, that we agree on that. But you also make you're arguing that the penalties for violation are exorbitant in violation of not the Eighth Amendment, but the First Amendment. I mean, doesn't your complaint alleges that, too? That is clearly something you can raise in the Superior Court, isn't it?
We point to the fines as an indication of their threat and their objective chilling impact on freedom of speech. I don't believe that we are saying that they are excessive under due process as a matter of law.
What's your vicarious liability argument? Is that not a constitutional argument of some kind?
It certainly is a constitutional argument, because what the vicarious liability provision or policy of enforcement does is it says that the originator of a sign, however that may be defined, the group that, say, prints out a poster, puts a poster up on its website in a PDF form, leaves posters at the bookstore, is ultimately going to be liable, or at least that's the practice, is held liable if...
What language are you speaking of?
The
starts out 108.1, no person shall affix. that, except as provided.
The practice, Your Honor, and I will point to the textual hook for this, the practice in enforcement is that they impose strict liability upon the originator or the organization that, you know, that issued the sign, that printed the sign. And if you look at the registration requirement, you see evidence of that in 108.11, requiring registration of the originator of the sign. In practice, the enforcement practice is that there is...
Useful as evidence. I don't, at least offhand, that doesn't create a strict liability.
I'm saying that the enforcement practices, and I'm pointing to that as evidence. I'm not asserting that in the plain text it says this is, in fact, what the regulation requires. I'm saying that is the enforcement practices to impose strict liability on the organization that issues.
What do you do with the amendments that were passed to this statute?
You know, the amendments are interesting because, on one hand, in filings before this court and the court below, the district argued in response to the Broderick v. Oklahoma overbreadth doctrine that there was no real or substantial overbreadth in the statute. But in the amendments that they provided to the court in a letter filing on November 2nd, the district now concedes, and I'm quoting from what they submitted, an immediate need to address the continuing threat to the public welfare by an unequal treatment of non-commercial advertising in the public space, unquote. That's completely in contradiction to the argument that the Mass F organization lacks standing under the First Amendment overbreadth doctrine to challenge the statute. They are, in effect, conceding that not only is it...
I think Judge Randolph is asking what's left with respect to your direct...
The content-based element. Yes. Obviously...
That was my question. I didn't ask it very well.
No,
I may not have answered it perfectly well. You know how that happens. In terms of the content-based, obviously that doesn't deal with the other issues, but focusing on content, even these amendments, temporary, though they assert they will be made permanent, remain content-based. You must evaluate the content on a poster to determine into which category it falls.
Because of what, event speech or related to an event as opposed to non-related to an event?
Yes, why should, for example, an issue or what is the compelling interest to distinguish between a sign that is issue-oriented that says, support civil rights, yeah, as opposed to a sign that is tied to a specific event. Signs of the same
but
size.
But all the other content issues that you raised, which were the distinctions between Crime Stoppers and political campaigns and issues, those are all gone now. Is that right?
No, they're not all gone out because while the temporary amendments seem a little ambiguous, what the district is really and has always been trying to do is to preserve the ability to have those political signs that plaster across the district for months and sometimes year, more than a year on end around election times, while posing discrete and finite duration restrictions on other speech. That's what they're trying to do with this event language.
I want to go back to that. First of all, that idea that you're promulgating right now is, I think, unprecedented in all of First Amendment law. The fact of the matter is that this is, in the parlance, a limited public forum.
Yes.
Correct? It's not a public forum. It's a limited public forum. And First Amendment law says that when you open up a limited public forum, the city, the state, whatever, can put conditions on it. If you have an amphitheater in the park, you can say you can use this for plays and music, but not for commercial purposes. And that's perfectly, absolutely permissible. So the question is, if the city says, if it's event related and the event occurs, tear it down, versus if an event doesn't occur, that strikes me as a perfectly content neutral. It does not depend on what the event is. It does not depend on the content of the sign. It doesn't depend on whether it's commercial or non-commercial or anything else. So I don't know where you get the idea that's content-based.
Your Honor, it is content-based because mechanically, you need to evaluate the content of the language on the sign to make the evaluation. But as a practical matter...
That can't be the rule because you have to determine whether something's commercial speech or political speech, you have to evaluate the content.
But as a practical matter, what that means is that issue-oriented signs of the same visual blight or attractiveness have to come down after 60 days, even though the issue, support civil rights, do this, do that, exhorting people to action remains relevant. Why does that have to come down when, for example, something tied to an event, the political campaign posters can stay up for a year or year and a half on the basis that they are tied or linked to an event, the event being the election, and have to come down 30 days after that?
I can think of many reasons why, and I don't think it's correct to say that it has to be a compelling interest. There's only a limited amount of space. There's only a number of parades we can have down Constitution Avenue, and so you allocate the space on the basis of need, and you do it in a content-neutral way, and that's exactly what they did.
And with all due respect to the Court, Your Honor, I believe that in Metro Media, and I believe that the case law is very clear, that once the government opens up a space as a limited public forum, while it can place reasonable time, place, manner restrictions on it, what it cannot do, absent a compelling reason, is discriminate between non-commercial speech based on content. Metro Media is very clear. We've cited in our briefs a slew of cases.
This is all substance that's not really before us, right?
This is not standing.
Right. Neither standing nor the Younger issue.
Absolutely correct, Your Honor, except for the fact that
You're saying it's not moot. You're arguing that everything's not moot as a consequence of the government's action.
There is an element, well, I am saying that, but as an element of abstention analysis, where you have a speech, where you have a challenge to a statute, for example, as Dombrowski stands for, abstention is not appropriate where you have a statute which is imposing ongoing irreparable harm to people's free speech rights. And that's what this is doing by imposing content-based restrictions on organizations' ability to post on a daily basis. And just going back to the mass effort issue.
Hold on. Judge Williams has a question.
Yeah, I'd like to get to your other client, MASFF. Has it in the past put up posters in a way that violates the regulation?
What I can say is it postered jointly with the Answer Coalition, and those posters led to citations which were issued solely against the Answer Coalition, because the Answer Coalition's, presumably because it had the Answer Coalition's name on it. But yes, they did.
Okay, so but those were not up 60 days, is that correct?
Those citations are the I'm referring to the citations that.
Well, I'm asking about what happened historically, not what any organization was charged with. Were they up for 60 days?
Not before the fines came.
Is there any place either in the complaint or elsewhere in which MASFF declares an intention to act in a way that violates the regulation? I guess should be divided into two parts: the regulation as it existed before, and then there's the regulation as it exists now.
They've submitted an affidavit asserting that they intend or seek to exercise the right to post to the same extent as is allowed, for example, campaign speech, which is allowed to stay up for an indefinite period of time at points potentially in excess of one year. They state that they seek to engage in posting to the same extent as is afforded others. They, in their affidavit, attest to being adversely impacted and being chilled from exercising that speech, and as a consequence, that limits their ability to post materials in order to reach out and communicate our message to the public at large. They would like to be able to, just as the political campaign posters are up for a year, they would like for their signs to be measured against the exact same standards, to be allowed to stay up.
I know what they would like. I'm just trying to get what they clearly propose to do. Well, they say having to remove them means their core purpose is frustrated.
Yes.
I suppose one could say that implicitly means they propose to engage in postering that is violative. It doesn't actually say they want to do it, but it, okay.
Well, to be clear, they're not going to violate the regulation. All right. I mean, that's...
No, I understand that, but they...
They would like to do it were it not for the regulation.
Exactly.
They would do it
were
it not for
the... They intend and they seek, and if the word intend should have been used instead of seeks,
that's... This is just at the complaint stage, right?
Yes.
We haven't had any factual recitation. Whether that's an accurate representation or not, we have to take it on its face. We have the affidavit.
And that's just that this wasn't resolved under Rule 56. This was resolved and as a motion to dismiss for all the facts and inferences. Reasonable inferences have to be drawn in favor of the non-movement. That's part of the element here of difficulty with Mass F.
What does it mean in the affidavit that we want to do postering to the same extent as others?
I think that the political campaign postering is really what we're talking about here. The political campaign posters are allowed to stay up for at times even a full year without the 60-day periodic removal requirements. In practice, they also don't require registration. Mass F wants to be able to put up their posters that address issues of social import, civil rights, that would be allowed to stay up more than 60 days to the same extent as, for example, is allowed the political postering, which is at least, in many instances, a full year.
So at least trying to read the affidavit in light of the change, you are saying that MASFF would like to engage in conduct that violates 108.5.
In terms of the change regulations, that is correct. Let me just 108. That's correct, Your Honor. That's absolutely correct. They would like to be able to put up issue-oriented signs on core political topics about civil rights, et cetera, that would indeed be allowed to be posted for more than 60 days, just as afforded political speech that comes in the event campaign-related category. That's specifically what one of the things that they intend to do if they were allowed.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll hear from Mr. Hyden.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, David Hyden representing the District of Columbia in this matter. Judge Kennedy properly determined that abstention was the correct path.
Well, I'm not following exactly as why complete abstention is the right path. That is, I understand the argument that an attack on the constitutionality of Section 108.9, that can be raised as a defense in the D.C. Court of Appeals after the administrative proceedings.
That's right. Yeah.
But I'm not understanding how they could raise the argument, perhaps the only one that's left on the constitutionality, which is the argument that the distinction between events, political events and political issues is unconstitutional. What does that have to do with 108.9?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, if I didn't follow to raise this at the district court level or at the administrative
level. No, in other words, for Younger to apply, there has to be a reasonable opportunity to raise this constitutional claim in the state court, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
Right, all right. So how would they be able to raise their constitutional attack, which for the purpose of this we're going to assume has merit, whether obviously you don't think it does, but for purposes of Younger we have to assume that it does.
Yes.
How would they be able to say that it's unconstitutional to distinguish between political events and political issues in defending against a 108.9 ticket?
Well, Your Honor, there's nothing barring them from raising this at the administrative level.
But it's not a defense at all to the claim. You could say the same thing. Nothing bars them from saying that they would rather that there were a different mayor. But that's not a defense to the issue of 108.9.
Well, as this court pointed out in JMM, the ability to raise constitutional claims as defenses is sufficient to get that.
It has to be a defense. Your view is, let me just put it another way. When this gets to the district, if we sent this to the District of Columbia,
yes,
you would say, when they raise that argument, mm-hmm. you would say, well, that's not a defense. That's not even relevant to 108.9. Isn't that what you would say?
Yes, likely, Your Honor.
So what would they say in response?
Answer would argue, obviously, that unconstitutionality is an absolute defense.
Well, but the provisions are inseparable, right? That we've They've said that here.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
Well, they've said two things here, I think.
I think that's a fair description.
I believe so.
Even counsel is nodding.
Yes, Your Honor. But returning again to the argument, Judge Kennedy's decision on abstention was proper. It is, answer has argued throughout this, both below and here, that the regulation as a whole is unconstitutional, that it's not severable. That was in their request for relief in the complaint below. It's what they argued at the district court below, and what so they continue to argue now.
You say Judge Kennedy said that it was not severable? What was not severable?
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Judge Kennedy did not. My statement was that that Answer's claim or what the relief that Answer was seeking was that the entirety of the regulation be declared
unconstitutional. But the severability question they don't address in the complaint.
No.
If you claimed individually each section was unconstitutional, you would ask for them all to fall, even though you might not win.
Yes, that would have been the proper way to do that, Your Honor. But I was simply pointing out that the relief that Answer has sought throughout this is to have the entirety of the regulation declared.
Yeah, it seems to me there's just a great deal of confusion in this case that's floating around about the idea of attacking a statute on its face for overbreath or whatever, and the idea that when you do that, it means that every subsection and section that's under a particular heading will fall, and that's just not the law. I mean, there are plenty of First Amendment cases where there's a facial attack. I'm thinking of Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition, the kiddie porn case, where that was a facial attack. But one provision in that was the morphing provision, which wasn't attacked on its face. And when the Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional, the morphing provision is still there. So just because you attack something on its face, it doesn't mean you attack all of 108. You have to have a basis for attacking the rest of it, unless there's a severability question.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree completely on the severability issue. The court has talked about the possibility of splitting these cases between the two administrative and district courts. I would point the court to District Property Associates, which found that this kind of federal plaintiff should not be permitted.
That's when they were inherently interrelated. That's when all the claims were related to each other. Imagine we had a specific previous case that said that these subsections are severable. Mm-hmm. Would you still be making the same argument?
No, in that case.
So then, just because they may end up arguing an attack on one set of regulations in one court and another in another, doesn't mean that Younger has to apply across the board, does it?
No, Your Honor. Though my reading of Younger is that generally it is applied as the whole, on the whole of the case, that's abstention or not abstention.
The defining characteristic is whether the federal action will have an impact on the ongoing state litigation.
Yes.
That is what really matters.
Yes.
If, in fact, the 0.9, which is involved in the state litigation, is severable, then nothing that the federal court would say about the other provisions could possibly have an impact on the state proceedings. And therefore, Younger doesn't apply. Isn't it as simple as that?
Well, Your Honor, I'm looking at Samuels v. Mackel, which seemed to be stating that a declaratory judgment has the same effect as an injunction, and I cannot see how an ALJ, given what you've just said and the correctness of it, that it could not, it would.
I'm talking about a legal effect, not a psychological effect. There is, if 0.9 is severable, there's no way that the judgments about the rest of these provisions can have any effect. I mean,
yes, I agree, Your Honor. I think that that in this case, again, returning to the psychological as you characterized it, I think any kind of ruling from the federal courts could not help but have an effect on the state proceedings. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Can we assume there not being any rulings on the matter,
mm-hmm.
We may think that it's clear that there is severability, but we're led to understand that the plaintiff will argue inseverability, which is its right, probably in both fora. It seems to have already done so before the district court. Doesn't that frame the issue? I mean, unless we resolve the issue as a matter of law, that they are severable, which is a little odd in a case where we're being asked to say there's no standing and that there's younger abstention. I guess it might be, assuming there's standing, it might be a legitimate route to younger abstention to resolve the substantive constitutional issue.
I would agree. That is a I apologize, it's something I hadn't considered, but I think you're correct in your reading of that.
We abstain on the question of severability, and therefore we abstain on the entire case.
Yes.
But that still leaves the other plaintiff.
Massive, Your Honor. I'm sorry, the, yes, MASFF. Though, as to their standing, I think Judge Kennedy was correct on that decision as well. The sole statement that we have of their intent was the statement in the affidavit of the imam. Massive seeks to engage in posturing to the same extent, et cetera,
et cetera. Right. Okay. So that means beyond the 60-day limit, right? So how does that fall short of what was sufficient in Babbitt?
Well, Your Honor, looking at Lujan, these vague intentions, a statement Massive intends or seeks to engage in posturing, that is simply not sufficient.
It's a little different, right? It wasn't, I mean, in the sense that there was the whole world, and the plaintiffs spoke in a vague way about possibly being affected by wildlife at one part of the globe, and that was found insufficient. Here's an organization which, so far as appears, is very interested in getting its message out to people, and believes that posters up for more than 60 days would be helpful in that, which seems entirely plausible. It doesn't seem to me that it seems to me to look more like Babbitt than Lujan.
But I would ask, Your Honor, where's the imminent injury?
Well, you say it's someday, so why don't we look at the appendix at page 76, which is the opposition to the motion to dismiss, where they say both MASF and ANSWER are currently refraining from posting materials to the extent as is allowed those engaging in favored speech because of the existence of the postering regulations and severe penalties. That's a statement of not someday, but of what they're currently doing. And I guess at the oral argument before Judge Kennedy, they likewise said that they were putting up the posters until the fines came out, and then they stopped putting them up.
Yes, for the first
time. What do you say about that?
Well, Your Honor, again, that's simply not sufficient to rise to the level of concrete and particularized actual or imminent injury.
Why isn't that? They say we're currently refraining. You answer Judge Williams. Well, this is just a claim that someday we want to put up posters. I point you to a statement that says we are currently refraining from doing it, meaning not someday, but today. And what's your answer to that?
Your Honor, again, where is the specific present objective harm that is happening to Massive in that statement? That is not sufficient in and of itself.
We're not going to expend the resources to put a poster up if we have to tear it down in 60 days. That's the harm.
We're not speaking. We want to speak, and we're not speaking. That's the harm.
There's nothing stopping Massive from speaking. They simply have to comply with the regulations as they are now, the amended regulations.
Yeah, they say that, and plausibly, that they're burdensome, right? Because more than 60 days is more convenient for them, a lot more convenient for them than with a 60-day limit.
Well, as a limited public space, these regulations.
Are you getting into the merits? Please don't.
No, Your Honor. I would certainly try to avoid that.
It would be a totally bogus First Amendment claim, but the fact of the matter is that you're at the complaint stage, and it may be a totally bogus factual claim.
But there's no way to make that determination at the threshold. And so if you need discovery, jurisdictional discovery, because of the question or the facts, you know, determine standing, then go ahead and ask for it. But I just don't see how you get around the allegation.
I understand your position, Your Honor, and while I don't agree that that's necessary at this point, I could see where that would be a possibility.
Do we have any further questions?
No.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Is there any time left for Mr. Massinio? Right, Mr. Massinio, we'll give you another 2 minutes, or maybe let's make it a minute. How's that?
I'll talk twice as fast then, Your
Honor. Yeah, there you go. You see how closely we monitor the time anyway.
with respect to Lujan and the MassF organization, I mean, Lujan is very, very clear that when a suit challenges the legality of an ordinance or a law that acts directly or regulates the conduct.
I think you should address, you seem to be doing pretty well on that one. I would address the other question. Are you willing to forswear the inseverability argument? Or do you intend to raise that in the court of appeal?
We would be willing to forswear it, and I think that projecting that throughout our brief, I mean throughout our whole presentation, and that tension of the two presentations that I've made about the severability is that the Answer Coalition is not really taking issue with the property damage provision. So that we would not have a problem. We would be willing. We would be willing to sever that for the purpose of moving forward.
Can I get a straight answer? Do you concede that 0.9 is severable from the statute 108? Yes or no?
Will it get the case into federal court? If it will, we absolutely concede.
Yes or no? Do you concede that it's severable?
I concede that it certainly could be severable, Your Honor.
No.
And what about 105?
The answer.
Six?
Could I just finish it? The answer is no. You don't concede that.
Before I make a concession, I have 5 seconds to just check with my co-counsel.
While you're consulting co-counsel, also put this question: are you ready to concede that 105 and 6 are severable? Because if they are not, it seems to me that they at least may be defenses that can be posed in the proceedings in the District of Columbia.
One moment, Your Honor. I was wrong. 108.9, the adhesive thing, it's severable.
Is severable?
Yes. Upon reflection and review, we believe it's certainly severable.
And the others? Really? In other words...
I don't think that...
Are you ready to say that under no circumstances will you pose a defense in the District of Columbia proceedings to the effect that the regulation as a whole must fall because any particular non-severable provision of it is unconstitutional?
3 seconds to consult. If I apologize and appreciate the indulgence. No, Your Honor.
No. Okay. Thank you.
And I very much appreciate your indulgence with respect to my consultation.
Both in the district court and before the District of Columbia, you reserve the right to attack the entire regulation on the basis of infirmities of particular provisions.
Accepting 108.9, the adhesive thing, we are conceding the severability of that, and if they can prove that that the adhesive clause has been violated, then
I'm not following the interconnection.
If they can prove that there was property damage, Your Honor,
The question is, again, I guess, if for any reason you can attack the regulations as unconstitutional, any regulation other than 108.9, your position is, even if you won on all those other ones, that 108.9 on the constitutionality question would still stand.
It is absolutely, yes, if it's severable, it's absolutely, it's constitutional.
Is it accurate that the only charge against you in the Superior or the District of Columbia proceedings is a violation of 0.9?
That's in dispute in those proceedings. In the record before Your Honor, what the District of Columbia submitted were representative samples. When these fines were, when the notices were issued, and all four of the representative samples all charged violation of the adhesive clause, we have objected. They've attempted at the administrative hearing to expand the scope of the violations beyond that which was sworn to by the inspectors on the face of the notice, and we are disputing that.
Expanded into what? What are the additional charges? I think I'll, well, I speak for myself. I have been operating on the basis that the only charge against you in the Superior Court was the violation of 0.9.
That's our posture, that is the...
That's not the district's posture?
No, the district's posture is that they are seeking to, in fact, go beyond the scope of those notices that say 108, and this is for the Antrim Coalition only, that say 108.9. They are seeking to expand that scope, and even though the inspectors did not, for example, swear that they observed more than three signs per block, they want to enforce citations on that basis.
Which we
object to that.
Provision is that of the 108?
Three per side of a
108.10 fixes a maximum of signs per block at three versions.
But there's no reference to that in the written citations?
They are resting on the fact that, well, that's correct. They're resting on what they are saying, and I would have to defer to their characterization of their own posture. They're saying that if they cite a violation of 108 at any point, that they can...
In any subsection of 108.
Not subsection. Just cite 108, that when they go before the administrative hearing process, that they can try and prove anything, frankly, that would be a factual violation. We've objected to that.
Is there anything in the appendix that fills us in on the propositions you've just expounded?
No, it's not in the record.
Not in the record.
I mean, because the record closed and... No, it was not in the record, and the district itself submitted the notices of infraction and itself selected these four as representative, and these four are, in fact, charging violations of the adhesive clause.
Did you get a citation for each one of these things? Did Answer actually get a citation, a physical citation? Did they get a piece of paper?
They've gotten like 200 pieces of
yes,
paper.
Yes, and what does it say on those people? Does it just say 108, or does it say the subsection?
On some it says... 108.9,
uh-huh.
And if I look in the record, I believe that the ones that the district submitted into the record say 108.9. That was the initial thrust. That's what they were alleging. But some also say 108.
I see. All right. I think we actually want to hear from the district on this as well. Thank you. Just on this one question.
Yeah, just I guess one final
question. Oh, I'm sorry.
Judge
Williams had
a moment. Will not be a contention of yours in the district court that because sections 105, 108.5, and 108.6 are unconstitutional in your view, the whole regulation must fall. I mean, this is
based
perhaps
on my
implicit,
concession.
This is perhaps
based
implicit
on my concession.
In what you said about 109.
Based 108. On my concession
9.
On 108.9, clearly. If we correct. That's correct.
Then we still have the question of what's at stake.
That we're going to find
yes,
out.
Yes.
Thank you. Can you enlighten us as to the district's view about what's actually going on in the district?
Well, Your Honor, my information is that the majority of the citations were for 108.9, the vast majority of citations. I noted in footnote 2 of page 5 in our brief that there were other citations citing other subsections, violations of other subsections, 108.7, 10, and 11. As to the allegation that the district is trying to enlarge its claims at at OAH, excuse me. I have no information about that, though I would deny it.
What page is that footnote on?
Page 5 of our brief, Your Honor. It's footnote 2.
Do any of the citations deal with the 60 days and the differences between campaign literature? Like, are any of them relate to 108.5 or 108.6?
No, Your Honor.
But then I think we have a follow-up question with Mr. Massenio as to the scope of the severability position.
This is a unique oral argument, but we are learning something.
And I do concur.
My question is that regardless of possible unconstitutional claims relating to 108.7, 108.10, 108.11, the plaintiffs here do not propose any argument in the district court that either those are unconstitutional individually or that they are brought down by invalidation of other parts of the regulation. In other words, it's the extending the severability question for 108.9 to all of those sections.
I concur with what opposing counsel says, which is that there is no infraction, notice of infraction, of which we are aware, that alleges a violation of the durational requirements.
Okay.
But
that doesn't answer my question.
But I thought it was an important element.
Yeah. No, I'm happy to have that.
With respect to the citations that are in the record that I do have knowledge of and can speak to, they do allege 108.9, the adhesive clause, and we will not be, in response to that, alleging that the whole that those cannot proceed because of the defects of other provisions.
What about the ones listed in footnote 2, which is apparently all we have by way of clues as to sections that could be at issue in the District of Columbia proceedings?
We think that the face of the notices define the face of the violation, Your Honor. What's in the record, what I have knowledge of, is 108.9 violations. That's what was in the media. That was what the thrust of everything was. And that's, in fact, all that the district has presented to this court in the record are citations alleging specifically the adhesive clause, 108.9, with specificity.
What's your defense to three posters in a block?
I don't have a specific context to evaluate any kind of defense to that. What I do know is, for example, looking at these representative notices, there is no inspector that says that was observed.
Well, in the four or five that are in the appendix, that's true. But then we have this footnote, and we have your representation when you stood up for the fifth time here.
Who's counting, Your Honor?
That there are other violations that the district's trying to put forward. So.
Well, I don't know what the district's – I cannot assert that there are specific provisions of which I am aware that are being alleged to be violated at the administrative hearing. What I do know is that where it says 108 in a notice of violation, I believe that they are trying to say that that could be any provision. But
how do you know that? Where did you get that?
from co-counsel.
No, I'm not asking for lawyer-client privilege. Is there anything in any public record to indicate that you've been cited for anything other than the adhesives problem? I mean, for example, in this footnote 2, counsel says that this information is outside the record. So it's really, is there anything in the record?
There's nothing in this record.
Or in any public record, is I guess what I'm asking. Have you received anything, any pleadings in the District of Columbia or anything like that that mentions anything other than adhesive violations?
Let me confer with counsel. I know that we've received nothing that mentions the durational requirements 5 and 6, but I have to confer with co-counsel.
Fair enough. Thank you.
What I can represent is that in the administrative hearings, they have the district has sought to expand the scope by saying that if it says 108, it could mean anything, even though it's not specified in the notice of infraction. And part of the issue or problem that may be feeding my inability to give you this information is that the administrative hearings are moribund. They're comatose. There's been no activity for 17 months.
Have you moved to?
There's a consent motion that's been pending for 17 months.
I'm sorry, what kind of a
consent? The Answer Coalition moved for discovery. The district wrote that we consent to most of the request, and that's been sitting there for 17 months. Nothing has happened since that time.
Can't just proceed with the discovery?
No, we have no authority. Because in the administrative process, you need an order. And that was requested by consent. This goes back to the issue of the irreparable harm. Every day, every month that this is going on, folks like the MassF and the Answer Coalition are restricted in the quantum of speech they are allowed to engage in. That's why it's imperative for this to be adjudicated.
All right, we have your argument, actually 15 minutes worth for the 2 minutes that we gave you. So
I appreciate that.
No, but you heard some from the other side, and we learned something, so we appreciate it. Thank you very much. Case is under submission.